This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When Olu Dara's new CD was released this year, jazz critic Bob Blumenthal wrote, "The greatest unhyped trumpeter, or rather cornetist, of the last 20 years has finally made his own album. He's created a folk blues Afrobeat CD stew where his singing and guitar playing are as prominent as his horn." This music is different from the music Olu Dara first became known for in the 70s and 80s, when he was part of the avant-garde jazz loft scene and worked as a sideman with such adventurous jazz composers as David Murray, Henry Threadgill, and Hammett Blewett. Olu Dara's own band makes music that bridges the music of Mississippi, where he grew up, with the sounds of New York, where he's lived since the 60s. The CD is called In the World, From Natchez to New York. This song is called Harlem Country Girl.
Country girl, you're so sweet. Harlem country girl, you're so complete. You know, I met you dancing on asphalt, wasn't too much grass.
Olu Dara, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me be the millionth person to ask, why didn't you record something like this sooner?
I was too young, and I had a lot of living to do. And another thing is that the recording was not the thing that was the goal for me. My goals were to do other things like theater, dance, film, and whatever, but I felt that recording too early would put me in a position of playing the same thing to the public, and the public wouldn't get a chance to do what I really want to do.
If you don't mind my mentioning your age, I think you're 57?
Yes, I'm exactly 57.
Which most people would think of as
old.
Hardly too early to be recording.
Yeah, some people record because just to get into to the business. You know, I didn't have any reason to record, you know, because I was already doing what I wanted to do. And recording, I hate to repeat myself, but recording would have put me into a position where people would have expectations like they do now.
Do you feel any more at home singing or playing?
Singing is something I started to do late in life, but I'm very comfortable doing that because it has to do with something that's very satisfactory to me is the voice, and also you can tell a story.
Yeah, so what made you decide to start singing, and did you enter it really slowly?
No, I just started right away. The first time I attempted to sing was when I recorded in 1977, the Wildflower series. Mine didn't come out, but everybody else's came out. But I just started to sing. I warned some singers on there. I called some professional singers, and I tried to show them how to do it, and they said, "Well, why don't you do it?" And that's when I started to sing. And of course, that record never came out. And when I formed my band, I just started to sing without ever even practicing singing or thinking about singing. I just needed to sing because the horn could only say so much.
Although you've lived in New York since, I think, 1963, you obviously feel very culturally rooted in Natchez, Mississippi. What was the music? Well, let me ask you first, what kind of town you grew up in, just to, like, describe the atmosphere that you grew up in.
Well, Natchez is a very beautiful town. It's on the bluff overlooking the Mississippi River. It's a very historical town. It's the oldest city on the river. It predates New Orleans when it comes to Mardi Gras and gambling and prostitution, whatever you want to say. But it was also a very nurturing place to grow up. Very small, but there were some brilliant, loving people there.
One of the tracks on your new CD, the opening track, in fact, is called Okra. And it's a song based on the kinds of calls that fruit and vegetable sellers would do. Tell me what you remember about those calls.
Well, I remember being very influenced by that sound from the vendors. I like that sound. It's very old sound, and it was very beautiful. And they had things to offer. What I mean by that is it's fruits and vegetables that we loved. And it was fresh, and I was very impressed by that. I liked to go out and smell the fruit and the vegetables. And I liked to smell the horse that he was driving and or the mule. And I liked to look at the wagon. I liked the sounds of the wagon. And I would follow them sometimes. And it always stayed in my head and my heart.
Well, let's hear your song. Tell me a little bit more about this song and the exact sounds that you based it on.
Well, I kind of merged cultures there. There's an African highlife feeling there, which is what I felt was happening. I didn't know it was really highlife until I discovered what a highlife was. But I merged that Mississippi vendor sound, that holler, with the highlife. And that it came out to be Okra.
Okay, well, let's hear
it. The song itself, yeah.
Let's hear it. And this is the first track on Olu Dara's new CD, In the World, From Natchez to New York.
Okra, 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 okra. Green peanut from Miss Mary's backyard, plenty, plenty tomatoes, pecan, pecan, blackberry, dewberry, I'm a cold man, cold man.
That's Olu Dara from his new album, In the World, From Natchez to New York. Now, how did you learn to play trumpet? And, you know, just like the cliche of Mississippi is almost that when you're born, they issue you a guitar so you can sing the blues. How did you end up with the trumpet?
Well, the trumpet, I guess we came from another side of town, I guess. And I met a man who just found his way into Natchez, and he was looking for a place to stay, something to do, and he turned out to be a very brilliant man. And I would help him. I helped him unpack his goods. His name was Lavanda Kynes, and he was a very young man. I thought he was older because he was mixed gray. But he asked me, what did I want to do? I asked him, what could he teach me? He said, anything. I remember that today. He said, anything. So, and he did teach me anything I wanted to learn. I started with clarinet first, piano, and the cornet. And I learned typing in there with him, how to set a typeset for newspaper, you know, photography, filmmaking. This was in the 40s. Tap dancing, metaphysical talk, you know, art, everything. He was that kind of a guy. So I stayed around him at all times, and I started playing cornet with him at the age of 7. And at the age of 9 or 10, I was traveling with him throughout Louisiana and Mississippi.
Playing?
Playing, yeah, playing cornet.
Huh. And what kind of music?
Oh, popular music standards, Ellington music, show music, movie music, you know, the standards of the time. You know, Sophisticated Lady and Smoke Rings, stuff like that, rhythm and blues stuff.
Was it unusual for him to be traveling with somebody that young?
No, it wasn't unusual for young kids in Mississippi to travel. Young, I mean, during that time, kids could, I was driving a car at 11.
Wow.
You know, and, you know, we were drinking at 12 in public. That was in the 40s and early 50s, you know. So I thought the whole world lived like that, you know. But Mississippi evidently is different.
So why cornet and not trumpet? What really are the differences for you as a player between the two instruments?
Well, the cornet is an old school trumpet. I can say it like that. Louis Armstrong and those guys in New Orleans and Deep South, they played cornet first for whatever reason. And the trumpet, it came along. The trumpet was like going from electric guitar to, from acoustic to electric guitar, in a way, because it has a higher, you can hit higher notes, and it has a more brilliant sound to it. And I remember my brother stopped playing the cornet because everybody had a trumpet except my brother and myself. So my brother decided that he wouldn't play a cornet because it was too ugly, too short, too silver, you know. In those days, it started making gold. They had gold trumpets, so if you had a gold trumpet, you were okay, whether you could play well or not. So my brother stopped playing, and I stayed with the cornet until I decided to get a trumpet so I could be in with the guys, you know. And I played trumpet for quite a few years, and then I came to when I got to New York, I was still playing trumpet. Then I started acting in plays, and I got a part as a cornet player. And it just took me back to where I started, and I got into the cornet again, late 70s, I believe, and I've been with it ever since. So it's related to the trumpet, but to me, it's another bird, you know.
Got it. Yeah. Do you like the sound better?
Oh yes, it's like a voice, like a human voice. It makes me feel like it's a human voice rather than a horn itself, you know. With the trumpet, I feel like just another guy playing high notes and trying to get a decent sound.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Olu Dara, cornetist, singer, songwriter. He has the first album under his own name. First album is Leader. It's called In the World, From Natchez to New York. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Olu Dara, cornetist and singer, and his new CD is called In the World, From Natchez to New York. Now, you left Natchez in 1958 to go to Tennessee State. In
yes.
Nashville to study music, yes? To study music there?
No, I went to study medicine.
Medicine?
Medicine, yes. I was going to go from there to Meharry University, which was right there, medical school, which is in the same city. That was our plan. I say our plan because, you know, my mother was involved in that plan also. But I decided that Nashville was so rich with music and the campus where I went to school, Tennessee State, was so rich with wonderful musicians, I decided to join the band and still studying medicine, pre-med, taking pre-med courses, but I just got the music bug. So what I did was I decided to go to the Navy School of Music. I joined the Navy and went to the Navy School of Music in Washington, D.C., only because I'd heard that John Coltrane and Cannonball Adderley and Clark Terry had gone to that school. So I decided to go to the Navy, and that's what happened. I did a year in school there, and then I played for another 3 years on ship.
So you went through the Navy in the naval band?
Yes.
So what kind of material would you have to play on ship?
anything from Nearer My God to D. So to marches, to dance music. I mean, we have to see sometimes a long time, and we play dance music, you know? We play dance music, and we play anything. Anything they want you to play, you had to play. And then back on shore, you play nightclubs, officers' clubs, play jazz clubs, you know, officers' clubs who like jazz and play for dances. You have to play everything. Play big bands also.
Now, how did you end up staying in New York after your years in the Navy?
I spent my last year in the military in New York. I was discharged in New York. I stayed around, and I ran out of money in New York. I was planning on going back to East Africa or Spain somewhere to live. I was only 24 years old, so I had nothing but freedom, nothing but time. And I ran out of money in New York, so I wound up in New York City.
I understand after you ended up in New York and decided to live there, you went for 8 years without performing.
Yes, I think it's around at 64, 70, yeah, maybe 8 years or whatever.
Why?
Well, I was kind of intimidated with the big New York scene. You know, I was still a small town person. Uh-huh. And I was living in a neighborhood with all these great artists I had heard about. I'd seen them in person. I've seen their records, heard their records or whatever. And I didn't think I was capable of playing on their level. And I hadn't tried. So, you know, I just thought that I was not good enough to play with them. And until I was basically forced into playing with them in a way they would... I would run into musicians who knew me in school, high school or college or the military, and they remember my talent better than I did. So eventually I got pushed back into the music world. So it just happened naturally, I believe.
So what kind of music did you start playing when you started performing again?
Rhythm and blues. I love rhythm and blues. Rhythm and blues and theater. I went on the road with Hair, the road company. Hair in 1971.
Boy, that show has launched more careers. It is just bizarre.
Yeah, it has. It really has. That really got me back into the ball game, I believe, because I stayed with them maybe 3 or 4 months, and I couldn't stand that anymore. So I said, well, the money was good for that time, very excellent for that time for a musician, but I felt that I needed to get back into New York and play with the creative musicians, even if I got no money, no money at all. I felt that I was back into it, and I wanted to just... So I rushed back. I quit to play Hair in Madison, Wisconsin, and came back to New York and really got into it.
Now, you ended up playing in Art Blakey's band for a while, the Jazz Messengers. And,
yes,
and Blakey's band was always considered just like a training ground for great musicians. I'm wondering what it was like for you.
Yeah, it's a good training ground for jazz musicians especially. But I felt that... I hadn't had enough of that. I thought I needed that. I thought that's what I really wanted. But you have to go somewhere to find out what you don't need, you know? And I found Blakey was very very nice. He's a very sweet man. He saw that I had another vision. So he let me explore my vision within his group. Most musicians would not allow you to do that. He allowed me to sing, which I wasn't a singer, or to tell jokes, or to play different trumpet styles that I didn't get a chance to play with other bands. And when I left this band, I had another vision. I knew exactly what I wanted to do.
What?
And I wanted to explore music that I really enjoyed. I guess you call it world music now, but at the time, in the early 70s, my thinking was that I wanted to play everything that I could play that was enjoyable to me, and I knew it would be enjoyable to my listeners, and I didn't want to bore myself or my listeners with the same sound.
A lot of jazz listeners were introduced to your work in the mid-70s through the 80s when you were playing early on in that period in what was known as the loft jazz scene, and then you were a really important sideman in bands led by the emerging composers of the period, composers who had a foot in the avant-garde. Thinking of people like Henny Threadgill and David Murray, Julius Hempel. And I'm wondering how you fell in with that group of people, those emerging composers of the time, who mm-hmm. were very adventurous in their compositions and drawing on basically all of jazz history.
Well, it was a... I don't know how it happened either, but I do remember being here before they were here, and they were you could say immigrating from cities, Chicago, the St. Louis musicians, a California musician, and I was already here, and they found it very difficult to find good trumpet players who could interpret their music since it was new to this area, and I was also looking for something else to do. So I had just left Art Blakey's group, and there was nothing else happening here. And so when they came here, it was a perfect opportunity for me to do something and to be able to help them expand the sounds they wanted to get out here. And I found it very easy for me to fit in with their groups, and I found that I was of some use to their bands. And it really helped me, and I think I really helped them.
Aludara's new CD is called In the World, From Natchez to New York. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with cornetist, singer, and guitarist Aludara. His new CD is called In the World, From Natchez to New York. When we left off, we were talking about how the songs on this record contrast with the more avant-garde music he played in the 70s and 80s, when he was a sideman in bands led by such important composers as Henry Threadgill and David Murray. I want to play something from a 1980 album that you were on. This is the David Murray Octet. The album is called Ming, and I'll play a David Murray composition called Dewey Circle. And you're featured on cornet or trumpet on this? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, probably trumpet. It must be trumpet.
And you're very prominently featured on this, and you take the first solo. So let's hear Dewey Circle, recorded in 1980. My guest Aludara on trumpet. Dewey Circle from the 1980 David Murray album, Ming, and we heard David Murray on tenor, Henry Threadgill on alto saxophone, my guest Aludara on trumpet. The energy on that recording is so great and really typical of some of the best kind of playing of that period, combining like the energy of the avant-garde with the energy of, say, New Orleans music of the 20s and 30s and the Duke Ellington Orchestra. Did you like that kind of energy, that combination of contemporary adventurousness with the early spirit of jazz?
It was a very difficult period for me. Let's be truthful about this.
Okay.
I was like a fish out of water because I didn't come up playing that type of music, nor was I playing it ever up until that time. And I was just listening to that recording and knowing what I was feeling then when I was playing it, you know? It's hard to explain in words, but I like to use the word interesting because...
Oh, yes, I know.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, I was trying to find my way within the on the sharp edges of that music, because that music was atonal in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I came up in a tonal world, you know. So it was geometrical, if you can understand what I mean by that, you know, trying to fit a triangle into a square.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that it was scientific in that way, so I enjoyed the scientific aspect of the music, and I enjoyed being from another culture. It's like being from another culture, trying to play into another culture's thing. That's really all it's about. And you don't know what it is, but you try to figure out what you can do to help it. And that was my job, you know, to try to make it better than it was, or try to add an ingredient that they did not have.
In a way, I feel like part of what you added was this theatricality and sense of show business. I remember seeing you, must have been in the early 80s, at a loft space in New York, and I think you were playing with the Henry Threadgill Band.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody's up there, and the music's great, and everybody's, like, playing, and they're very serious about their playing. And you're up there wearing this beautiful suit, and there's just this sense of, like, theatricality in your presence, you know, that you just had this sense of theater in a way that the other members of the band didn't seem to. And you had this look in your eyes of just knowing that this was a performance and you wanted to make it a performance.
Well, that's the way I am. I grew up in theater from elementary school, and I always like to see people satisfied in the audience. Whether they're smiling or just satisfied, whatever. But that was always my feeling when I get on stage. My first thought is, I'm going to do everything I can to give them something fresh, something they haven't seen before, or another twist on something they've seen.
So, you know, being from a small town, being from the South, being from a tonal world, did you sometimes feel like you were in another country when you were in New York playing?
Look, you just read my mind. Because that's just the way I felt. I always felt that New York, the island of New York, is another country, you know, when you really look at it, you know. It's an international feeling, of course, but I could be anywhere, you know. I've been in other places, it feels, has the same feeling, out of this country.
So do you feel that with the music that you're doing now on your new CD, and the music mm-hmm. you were playing earlier that wasn't recorded with your band, the Okra Orchestra, that you've managed to kind of put together the two worlds, the New York that you live in and the Natchez, Mississippi that you're from?
Yes, it is. It's a perfect mix, I think, of the two worlds I've experienced in my life, the two worlds that has affected me mostly.
You've said about your own music, I've been put here to relieve tension. Which, that was a very interesting thing to say. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, I guess I've felt that all my life, because I always felt that people had little problems, you know. Even in the first grade, I felt that people were so uptight or not comfortable with themselves or their surroundings. And I always had a sense of humor, and I think I used my sense of humor to relax people, to relieve tension. I found that was my job in my community, in school, in my family, or whatever. Even now, today, I find people are very... I don't know what word to use, but not comfortable, you know? And being an artist and entertainer, I felt that my job was to relieve tension because, you know, when I get up on stage, the light comes on, I look out in the audience first. And I'm comfortable and they are not, and they paid to see me. And I just always wonder why. They should be really comfortable. I should be the nervous one, you know? But I found it's the other way around. People are just not very relaxed. I don't know what it has to do with the culture, or has to do with human nature, or whatever. The human being is very tense, very aggressive, and can be very scary. So I felt the way to help myself get through this maze of uptightness is to have a sense of humor and to be a stress reliever myself. You don't have to go to the pharmacy to get me. I'm right here in the flesh.
How did you get your name Oludara?
An African priest, a Yoruba priest, spoke to me one day. He said, you know, I was dealing with coconut shells, reading coconut shells the other night, and asked my God through the shells what your name was, you know, in another life. And the shells told me that your name was Oludara. And the name fit me so perfectly. This was in the 60s.
Is this when you were in the Navy?
Right after I got out of the Navy. Uh-huh. It means God is good. And I accepted that name. I called my father and told him that I had accepted another name that fit my personality.
What'd your father say? I think sometimes parents would be very offended by having, you know, the family name replaced.
Well, he just said, are you a communist? That's all he said. That's all he said, and I laughed, you know. You know, I think he thought it was a Russian name or something, you know.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Oludara's new CD is called In the World, From Natchez to New York. One of the tracks features his son, the popular rap performer Nas. It's called Jungle J.